luck is never just luck.
If you think winning is only a matter of chance, think again. We bring you sports gaming strategies and information that changes outcomes.
Keep it here.
And get the winning edge. This is Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM.
Welcome into the Early Line, live right here on Sports Grid on a Friday morning. I am Kevin Walsh, joined, of course, by Donnie Wrightside. Donnie, how are we feeling on a Friday?
Feeling good. It's a Friday, the end of the work week here for us, which only ramps up into an incredible sports weekend. The Dodgers stayed alive last night, so more baseball is great. And today, of course, a Football Friday, Kevin. Let's get after it.
No doubt about it. Really, really excited to talk about all things within the NFL. We'll get you a little bit of the big games in college this week, as well as a little talk on the baseball postseason. I wanted to make one quick note on the NBA, which won't make today's slate. Last night, Steph Curry, 45 points, a great game against the Clippers. Donnie, the CLV window, loves your Steph Curry MVP. Already down 6-1. Luka, by the way, I don't know who put Luka as the favorite to an MVP. He's not even the second choice anymore to win the award. They immediately moved off of that position, which I find quite funny. Let's do a little Thursday night football for the people, though, because this, as promised, was a game. The Browns win 17-14, covering the 1.5-point closing spread. All the Broncos +3.5 running to the windows when they found out about the Baker news can rejoice, though. And under in this 31 total point scored game. And overall, Donnie, the Browns moved to 4-3. The Broncos dropped their fourth straight game.
Yeah, tough look for the Broncos here as now, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, he was really banged up coming into this football game, going on the road. Still no excuse for the way the Broncos played overall because it looked like a pretty lackluster effort here, Kevin, early in that game from the Broncos as the Cleveland Browns got up 10-0 right away as we were sitting back watching the game on In-Play Sports Take Home. Man, this is probably the easiest over you're going to have all season long. 40.5, where do I sign up? Well, they end up only scoring 31 points. Why? Because nobody scored in the second quarter. 14 points in the third quarter. 7 in the fourth quarter. The Browns win, and you're right. When we try to play handicapper and we are oddsmen, when you get into the game, just as important sometimes as who actually wins that game. Because if you were waiting all around and you just wanted the Broncos, I don't care. Case Keenum's a quarterback. Denver's going to win at any cost. And you waited to the last moment, you took that loss. But if you were smart to try to read the tea leaves early in the week of the quarterback situation, the running back situation for the Browns, you cashed in on this one, but stayed under the total. Most people looked at this game saying, no way they're going to get into the 40s. Congratulations. You were correct.
And I'll tell you what, on In-Play Sports tonight, I was like, I think there might be a little juice in this game. And then the opening possession happened. I was distraught as I thought I missed out on, as Donnie said, the greatest over this sport would ever see. That certainly was not the case. The Browns went to relying on their run game there. And I think as good of a backfield as you have in Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, I think it still shows that a big part of the reason why this team is as successful as they have been with a clean game from Case Keenum overall is that offensive line, Donnie. And it's also Kevin Stefanski, one of your, you know, 10 or 12 best coaches probably in the sport, it feels like, with what he was able to do in year one in Cleveland, and it feels like he's doing it here again. I know Denver's nothing to write home about. We've talked about this group being overachievers, but the Cleveland Browns really did need to gut out a win. They were certainly probably buoyed by being home for the football game here, but to get the Ernest Johnson a step up of 22 for 146 and a score was big. And again, a clean game from Case Keenum is really all they needed. As the radio audience enters the fold here, appreciate all those listening to the Early Line on Sports Grid Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 204. Kevin Walsh, Donnie Wrightside with you here on the Friday morning. We were wondering, Donnie, is there a little value on the Browns missing the postseason? This result here doesn't necessarily take me off that question, but they certainly needed this result here, I think, to keep things in check moving forward.
Yeah, and also when you look at the Cleveland Browns' perspective from last night, nobody would have faulted Kevin Stefanski and the Browns for losing that game. I mean, you lost your quarterback, you lost your top two running backs, your two top wide receivers hobbling around on the outside. So on coming back on a short week this week, but that was a nice win by the Browns. But also, you know, let's check in on things. Like Case Keenum was thrust into a starting position, only got a couple days being the number one starter. Who'll be better down the line? But how much better is going to be the question mark? Because now we're seeing the news coming out last night, Kevin, on Baker Mayfield. You know, torn labrums, damaged shoulders, broken bones. If this is one of those 4 to 6 week injuries or even longer if Baker gets surgery, you're only as good as your quarterback is. Now, did that give you pause last night? Hey, man, I saw a lot of Case Keenum. He looks like he can really lead them to the playoffs. Absolutely not. That was more of, hey, you're a veteran guy. Let's gut this out. Let's have a great running game. It's Dearness Johnson, 22 carries for 146. He was sensational. But long term, you can't win with a backup quarterback and do a lot of damage in the NFL, particularly with Case Keenum. He might be good, as I said yesterday, Kevin. Give him a week, two, three, or four just to keep the Browns above water until Baker Mayfield comes back. But again, that's if, Kevin, Baker Mayfield does come back.
On, and that's obviously super, super important. I want to quickly mention this thing from Denver, though, Donnie. Is it time to move to Drew Lock? At the end of the day, they're minus 650 to miss the playoffs. They're 20-1 to win their division, the longest odds by a country mile. This isn't, we said this at the time, too. This doesn't have anything to do with Teddy Bridgewater. You think he's a better quarterback? Fine, okay, probably. It's not the point. These are useless reps out there with Teddy leading this team. Is it not, Donnie?
It's exactly. You hit the nail on the head. Teddy Bridgewater is not your future of the quarterbacking for the Denver Broncos. He's not going to lead you into deep into the playoffs or win a Super Bowl. Maybe Drew Lock can be. Maybe he can't be. But at least you find that at the end of the season, oh, yeah, let's now trade for Deshaun Watson or another quarterback. At least you have clarity into the future, Evan.
And be honest with yourselves. At this point, if Drew Lock leads you to more losses, that's good. You stink. You're not going to the playoffs. We'll talk more Week 7 action next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, let's keep up in motion here on a Friday. Talking Week 7 NFL, coming off of the Browns winning against the Broncos, moving to 4-3 now. They're looking to keep pace with two teams right now above them still in the standings, the 5-1 Ravens and the 4-2 Cincinnati Bengals. Those two teams will meet this week. The Ravens at home are 6.5-point favorites, Donnie. The total is 46.5. Lamar Jackson absolutely owns the Cincinnati Bengals, a crisp 5-0 against this team. The last three games, he has won by 24 or more points against Cincy, but it feels maybe like a different Bengals team this year. What do you make of this AFC North showdown?
I like the Bengals, but it looks like it's probably going to be a clean 6-0 here. And not because, again, as I said, the Bengals are a bad football team. They're not. They're good. They'll play you tough. They'll play good teams really tough. But also, you take a look here at the FanDuel Sportsbook. Opened up at 6.5, Kevin. It stayed at 6.5 for most of the week. So I doubt we're going to see that 7 price point. Maybe it dips a little bit lower to 6. But also keep in mind from a total perspective as well, the 48.5 that we saw opening, now sitting at 46.5 midweek. And you say, let me get this straight here. Because I've been on a couple team totals here for the Bengals already to start the season. I like their offense. I like their quarterback. I like their running game. I like their wide receivers. But they're not that up-tempo type team. Does Ja'Marr Chase give you that impact of getting down the field? Absolutely, he does. But they're more of a tempo team that slows it down, that's going to run the football, maybe counter your deep shots every once in a while with Ja'Marr Chase. A good offense. But then in case in point, when you take a look at the Baltimore Ravens, they can get after it, but they can also play poorly on offense at times. I think this makes sense here from the 48.5 down to the 46.5. You have that interdivision battle here. I look for two teams that do play decent defense here, two good offenses. But if I'm looking for this game overall, I do think the Baltimore Ravens win the game, Kevin. So when you're dealing with 6-point number, like 6.5 in that range, you can't say to yourself, well, I think the Baltimore Ravens are going to win, but I think the Cincinnati Bengals will keep it close. You can't have that. Because if you're taking under a touchdown, you have to legitimately think, Kevin, in the fourth quarter, this game could be 23-23, and anybody wins this, and maybe by a field goal, and that's why you take the Bengals. I think the Bengals are a very good ball club here. I just think they're stepping up in competition, playing on the road. A little bit different for me, Kevin, if this game was at home in Cincinnati, but it's not. It's in Baltimore. Baltimore should take care of business here.
I think the 6.5 is calling, right? The fact that you don't have to lay that touchdown price is very enticing on a Baltimore Ravens team coming off of their most impressive victory of the season, beating the Chargers by 4 touchdowns. Maybe one of the best results any team can put on a resume thus far with what they did to that Chargers offense. Overall, you mentioned the total, and you're so right. The thing is, this is a Bengals team that played over week one in Minnesota. 5 straight unders, 5-1 to the under this Cincy team this year. And I look at the Bengals and I go, good offensive weapons. I like Burrow, Chase, Mixon, Boyd. They've got pieces there. And we always want to fade this defense, it feels like, but it's just not working out that way. And it feels like this is maybe the first time that they've started to trick down some of those Cincinnati totals. And it makes all the sense in the world. This is one of the games, Donnie, that we have some early props open for as well. And we can look for some opportunities. And one that I did think was quite interesting was the Lamar Jackson passing prop. We've talked a lot about this specific prop this season. Something that went over his first 5 weeks of the year, wasn't able to get home against the Chargers. Somewhat predictable, though, because of how vulnerable that Chargers team is against the ground. I think you might want to come back to Lamar here, because if you look at this Bengals team, they've played some very, very bad quarterbacks. Jared Goff, Ben Roethlisberger, the Justin Fields-Andy Dalton game. But they've played two real quarterbacks when you're talking about an Aaron Rodgers and a Kirk Cousins. And both quarterbacks, Donnie, got into the 350 passing range here. The Lamar over 230.5 is a look for me on his overpassing prop.
It's an interesting one here, because I know a lot of people look at some different websites on, you know, what makes sense here. But you also have to take a look at, you know, who you played has to do with some things, but also how you played. If you take a look at Pro Football Focus here, the number 6 overall defense in football, you guessed it, the Cincinnati Bengals. How about the Baltimore Ravens? They're actually ranked 19th. So normally when you look at this game, you say, okay, Cincinnati can score, the defense stinks. And Baltimore's defense is always really good, but their offense should be able to move the football as well. I think you get a little bit underslated, which you already brought up. The Cincinnati Bengals offense is moving the football. You know, they got close to their team total versus the Green Bay Packers. They hit their team total last week. So what does that usually mean, Kevin? A lot of overs. Not the case. It's because the Cincinnati Bengals defense is playing some good football.
It really is. And the offense is also in some spots doing enough. Like, they ran it up on the Lions in the second half. I know you know the game well, right, Donnie? But that wasn't a game where they were just dominant start to finish.
No.
They only played a real half of football against the Jags, but it's all they needed. Closed up shop against Pittsburgh. They were awful against the Chicago Bears. So they have been a very interesting team in that way. A big matchup there. Since he gets that win, goes 5-2, brings the Ravens down to 5-2. We're going to have some interesting conversations on the Bengals. Another game that's going to require some interesting conversations. Perhaps Tua's last game as a Miami Dolphin, Donnie, and they are 2.5-point home dogs to the Atlanta Falcons. Of course, the spot, I think, matters a lot. Miami off of a London game. You've got the Falcons off of a bye, but it is still jarring to see ATL as a road favorite versus anyone, especially a team that had preseason expectations like the Dolphins.
You're right. This is an interesting game to look at, too. Keep in mind, you know, you always deal with weather in South Florida. It looks like they're set up for some thunderstorms in the afternoon, which, even though it does have a canopy roof over Hard Rock, we've seen it rain and rain heavily, like a slip and slide in there. So if we look at this game on its whole, you go over to London, you lose to the Jaguars, right? You say, oh, I can't take the Dolphins any way, shape, or form at this point. But you can't look at these games as individual entities. You have to look forward and say, okay, what's going to make some sense here? Does anybody ever want to lose to the Jacksonville Jaguars? Absolutely not. So now you're looking at a team that probably knows they're not going to the playoffs in the Dolphins. But also keep in mind, when they went to Jacksonville, everybody was injured. You're down your wide receivers. You're down your starting cornerbacks. The first thing you want to take a look at when the next game opens up, you say, okay, where can I find some things that might have changed from the previous week to this week here? It's the Miami Dolphins, and it's their practice report. Nobody sat out of practice this week. A lot of limited practices on Wednesday and Thursday, but as long as you're on the field Wednesday, Thursday, and then you clear that last hurdle on Friday, you should be good to go. So any football team that we're looking at, like Tua Tagovailoa played really well against Jacksonville in London. Coming off of an injury, didn't know whether he would play well or even play at all. He did play, and he did play well. Another week of him getting healthier. So now you take a look at your wide receivers like Devontae Parker coming back, even Preston Williams coming back to the offense. That's always nice. And also you're starting two cornerbacks coming back into the fold as well. Keep in mind, they're not playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They are actually playing the Atlanta Falcons, who I don't think are very good to begin with here. I think this is a decent look here maybe for a home dog to fire But if the weather conditions hold up here, maybe a team total here for the Miami Dolphins, because a lot of people are just going to look to last week. Keep in mind, as I said again, Tua played very well against, yes, a bad defense, but without a lot of weapons. And also the press clippings that are coming out now. Tua looks like he's about to be thrown to the side. What a better mark to tell your, you know, ownership. Look at me, 360 at home, two touchdown passes. We won this game. I can be your franchise guy.
I think all of those narratives are very, very important to breaking this game down. The spot to me was fascinating, though. Off the London game, not taking the bye. Rarely happens. Since 2017, we've only seen three teams do it. So I went back and I looked at how those teams performed. The AFC title game participant Jaguars group wasn't able to take their bye because it was so early in the season. They play Josh McCown and the Jets and lose outright as about field goal favorites. The Baltimore Ravens played them in that game. That was the team that lost to Dalton week 17, put Buffalo into the playoffs, and Dalton became God in Buffalo basically for a week. That was a good Ravens team. They got shellacked by two touchdowns at home against Pittsburgh. So I was like, okay, there's something here. And there was one more example. A Dolphins team in 2017 that didn't take the bye. And their next game was at home as 2.5-point dogs, and they won outright against the Tennessee Titans. They certainly are live, but I've also seen all of those games very low scoring. I think when you talk about that weather, Donnie, this could be a lower scoring affair than that 47 might suggest. We pause the NFL here. Let's talk a little Major League Baseball, because the Dodgers kept their season alive, and the Red Sox are going to try and do the same. We'll talk about it next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on Sports Grid. Let's talk a little Major League Baseball here. The postseason continues, and the Dodgers' season continues. Last night, they were still favorites because of course, but it felt like this was going to be a very tough spot for them. A bullpen game up against Atlanta's ace, Max Fried. And in the first inning, Freddie Freeman hits a two-run homer. It's 2-0. Freed's got the ball. The Dodgers are done. And then the Dodgers. They win the game 11-2. Atlanta doesn't score again. The Dodgers keep scoring. Chris Taylor, because he wears a Dodgers uniform, is essentially the best player on the planet with a multi-home run game. If he wore any other uniform, I'm convinced this wouldn't happen. AJ Pollock got in the mix as well. This was for a multi-home run game himself. This was a spot, Donnie, where we talked about it a lot. It feels like the Dodgers won this game for no other reason than they're the Dodgers. The spot didn't line up. The matchups weren't in their favor, and they still found a way.
No, Max Fried on the mound versus a bullpen for the Dodgers that particularly hasn't been a great bullpen here, at least in the championship series. You also slapped a slight favorite here to the Dodgers yesterday, 140, 150, wherever it opened up here at the FanDuel Sportsbook. And he said, all right, yep, it's the Dodgers. Most people just can't get out of their head, just like myself, that the Dodgers actually might get knocked out of the playoffs before winning a World Series. Well, case in point last night, as we were watching on In-Play Sports Tonight, two-run blast Freddie Freeman in the first inning. And I go, ha-ha, that team total 3.5 at minus 105 looks really good right about now on the Atlanta Braves. So let me get this straight. I have roughly, I don't know, 25 outs or so against the bullpen to get two more runs. Sign me up. Where is that going to happen? It didn't happen. They scored two in the first and none the rest of the game. So even if you were looking from a live betting perspective, did anybody want to jump in the minute Freddie Freeman hit a two-run home run in the first inning, knowing that Joe Kelly then gets knocked out of the game for an injury, bullpen the entire way through, and oh yeah, Max Fried is on the mound. I didn't hear very many people raising their hand saying, yep, now's the time to take the Dodgers. But boy, what a time to take the Dodgers it was. 11-2 final, 17 hits by the Los Angeles Dodgers yesterday, only 5 by the Braves as they stave off elimination and send it back to Atlanta. And we'll see what happens from here on out, Kevin, because I know we like to flip it forward to the next game. Max Scherzer's on the mound. And if his arm fatigue is gone and he is Max Scherzer that we know, are we just staring down the barrel of a game seven now in the NLCS?
Well, here's the thing. If we are, then they're staring down the barrel of Walker Buehler, which is what I wanted to bring up here. There's this updated series price that still has the Dodgers at plus 184. I'm not trying to discredit anything Atlanta has done, though I think a lot of this core has to think about last year's NLCS where they had a 3-1 lead over the LA Dodgers. And they probably have a more difficult task this go around. Maybe you'd argue, well, last year was neutral site. Totally, totally fair. But now you are at Atlanta, sure. Scherzer and Buehler is 66% of the top three in the NL Cy Young race. I mean, you are dogs of a minus 160 or better price in both of these games here if you're looking at the Atlanta Braves. The Dodgers number, Donnie, is incredibly enticing. And we made the point, they're plus 350 to win the World Series. Due to how the fatigue has kind of set in for this team. And by the way, you mentioned Joe Kelly. As much as he didn't have it to start last night's game, he'd been very good for that team. He's now done for the season. You know, we've seen Justin Turner get banged up. Max Muncy's not coming back. We never talk about the fact that Clayton Kershaw isn't even on this team anymore. I'm not running on the Dodgers plus 350 World Series price, even if they would be favored over an Astros or a Red Sox. But the Dodgers to win two games with Scherzer and Buehler at plus 184 is a very, very enticing situation, Donnie.
No, it certainly is. And take a look at case in point last night, Kevin, as we're watching this game, or at least the setup to the game here. We were talking about it, and I said, you know what? You got to get it done if you're the Atlanta Braves in this game. This is set up perfectly. You have all the momentum. You know, Dodgers, hopefully we get lucky here. You have Max Fried on the mound versus a bullpen start. If you could have drawn up a scenario in April the 2nd, let's just say, and said, there's going to be a time where you're going to be in a closeout situation at Dodger Stadium with Max Fried, who's pitching very well, against the Dodgers bullpen, you can close him out, you would have signed that up each and every time. But you're right. Now you flip it back and go back to Atlanta where you're looking from a psychological perspective. Man, we really should have closed him out right here. We didn't get it done. Okay, we're going to go back home. And yeah, it's not another Dodger bullpen game. It's going to be Scherzer and Walker Buehler on the mound. A legitimate chance where you could lose three straight and slide your way right out of the playoffs. Now, keep in mind, Atlanta's a good ball club. They're going home. It's much easier to play at home. We've seen the Dodgers play on the road at Atlanta already in the series. Didn't go over all that well. So it's not like you're saying, hey, the Dodgers are automatically set up to win this series. Because, again, keep in mind, Max Scherzer's complaining about a dead arm. Does that mean he can go three innings? Or does that mean he can go seven innings and he's rested and ready to go? This should be a fun one to watch it play out. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Dodgers do force a game seven.
Really, really interesting stuff to follow over the weekend, no doubt. But I think overall, Donnie's right. If you would have said, hey, Atlanta, you're up 3-2 going back home, they take that every single time. Let's talk a little Houston-Boston here. It's an interesting one, man. Luis García has been horrific in the postseason. 3 2/3 innings, 10 earned runs. That ERA is almost a 25 spot for Luis García in his two outings. In comes Boston's ace, Nathan Eovaldi. Last time we saw him on the mound, he's trying to hold the game together in Boston and certainly did not do that, although maybe it was because the umpires are all horrible. Another great thing for Major League Baseball. The total's coming down. Feels like a statement here by the book, Donnie, dropping this to an 8.5, even though every single game in the series has been able to go over that mark. What do we think about what is essentially a pick'em game here between Houston and Boston?
Yeah, when you're looking to try to break it down, you're right, though. The MO of the series has been games going over the total. And why, again, is that going to stop now? Garcia's been a bad pitcher over the last 30 days, Kevin. An XFIP over 5. And we like to talk about the equal opportunity chance to smash him. Yes. Take a look at what he's done to lefties. Keep in mind, also, he's a right-handed pitcher. 613 weighted on base percentage and an ISO power number of 0.600. That's off the Richter scale type stuff. Then you take a look at the right-handed batters here. He's faced 18 over the last 30 days. 367 weighted on base percentage and a 200 ISO power number. This lineup looks really good here for the Red Sox. Then you flip it over to the other side. Okay, Nathan Eovaldi's a decent pitcher. I understand that. The one way you really get after Nathan Eovaldi, to me, Kevin, is from the left-hand side. But if you take a look at the Houston Astros projected lineup tonight, Brantley from the left side, Alvarez, and Tucker. So three lefties, six righties. I actually give the advantage tonight once again to the Red Sox, but I do think the Red Sox will be able to hit two tiny ballparks, equating to more runs here, Kevin, particularly in the American League Championship Series. I'm going to take Boston, and I think they can go over the total tonight.
I'm very surprised that they proceeded to drop the total down. You could have posted the 9 and probably still got people to bet over. But sometimes, you know, maybe they're giving Nathan Eovaldi a little bit too much credit because, listen, yeah. I get it. Nasty Nate, all that, right? But, like, the Astros have now seen him. And it's the Astros. Only once they have not scored this entire postseason at least 5 runs. It was the game I bet them over 4.5 for a team total, which is, of course, just sometimes how things work out here. But I cannot believe in the way that this total is dropping. Looking through as well, Donnie, for some props in this game, one hitter prop parlay that I really like here is Correa and Bregman to each get a hit at minus 112. Correa has a hit in every single game in Houston this year. You take over the career against Eovaldi regular season, 5 of 16. Bregman, same deal, hit in every single game in Houston this year. Career against Eovaldi is a nice 3 for 6 with multiple total bags, getting two, you know, doubles and home runs against Eovaldi here. I think minus 112 on Bregman and Correa to get a hit is a really nice hitter prop parlay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good hitters in this. And even if you flip it over to the Boston Red Sox side here, going up against right-handed pitchers, you know, the same MO that's been all the way through this series for me is there are 5 batters I want to take a look at because they are damaging right-handed pitching. Take a look at the Boston Red Sox here. Schwarber out of the leadoff spot, 286 ISO power number. Hernandez, 393. Devers, 440. Bogarts, 269. Martinez, 304, all with high weighted on base averages as well versus right-handed pitching. If you're going to get runs, you're going to get base hits. So I'm looking more towards the Boston Red Sox side. I know I'm going to get the full 9 at-bats. And if you're just going to try to line up 2 or 3 of these guys, I think it makes a lot of sense. Last night, it went up in flames, actually. I had Kyle Schwarber, who did not get a base hit, but Seager got a base hit late. And also keep in mind, there was an odds boost on the FanDuel Sportsbook yesterday, Kevin. Corey Seager to get 1 base hit and also win the game, the Dodgers. That happened. So that cashed in.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be a really good night here to watch Houston and Boston. But you also, Donnie, if you're saying we'll let Boston to keep this thing going, plus 340 series price?
Yeah.
11-1 World Series price. I feel like the World Series price is so long. Maybe you do take a look at that number there, or do you go series price? Does any of these future spots here on Boston make some sense?
I mean, if you think they're going to win the game tonight, you go to a, you know, winner-take-all game 7. It does make sense to take some of these long futures, Kevin. I put out on Twitter yesterday, I said, any takers here? Dodgers are getting 380 to move on to the next series. Boston getting 380 to move on into the next series. Boston, I apologize. 380 and 380. So when you're looking at both of those, instead of just taking a look at a one-game sample size, can they win tonight? Take the longer approach. There's more money in those.
11-1 for the Boston Red Sox. Yeah. To win the World Series is a big, big price there. But you might have to let the both Houston games ride. But then again, if you take 11-1 to a World Series, no matter who they are playing, you're going to be able to make some really nice money. We take a break here on the early line. College football, big slate once again. We'll break that down next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on the early line. Let's talk some college football. Try and pick out the 5 biggest games that this weekend slate has to offer. And there is a fascinating one on the board. The number 8 Oklahoma State Cowboys are 7.5-point dogs against unranked Iowa State. Now, let me say, I get it. We see ranked versus unranked all the time, where an unranked home team is a favorite. I don't know, Donnie, if you will ever find an example of an unranked team being better than a touchdown favorite against a team that is inside the top 10. The disrespect to our Oklahoma State Cowboys. Bless that win total. Boy, did I need it. I can't believe this number here going up against the Cyclones. I truly can't.
Yeah, it's almost like if you're looking at Oklahoma State, right? They're getting penalized because they're not winning the way they used to win. Oh, look at them go out there, 55-35 win. That's a really good football team. But then all of a sudden, when they go out there and win 31-20, something's broken. Something's wrong with this team. I just don't think they can do it here. Also, keep in mind, this game is on the road in Ames. Tough place to play, yes, but maybe we thought that Iowa State might be coming into this game as the top 10 team, not Oklahoma State, before the season started. But you can't penalize Oklahoma State here. Take a look at this. Boise State, great football team? No, but good football team. Tough to go on the road and beat them. They did it 21-20. Take a look at Texas. Very talented team. Went on the road, seized the fourth quarter down in Austin, and won 30-24. It's not as if they just played a couple, you know, cupcake teams on the road and said, hey, you know, this is where they're going to get their comeuppance. This is a pretty good Oklahoma State team. They're 6-0 with two good road wins. They're not going to be fooled going in, oh, man, we never saw a crowd like Iowa State before. This is wild. You know, you want to say who the better football team is, that might be debatable, but you're right. You're getting more than a touchdown here. We're not asking you to pick this game money line and say, well, who's going to win? Okay, I'll take Iowa State at home. You're asking Iowa State to put a beat down here on Oklahoma State, who has not lost yet and does play some good defense. Is it too easy to say, give me the points here? Or do we say, it's a really sharp line. It's there for a reason. Take that number.
And this is the thing, right? We've talked about this throughout a bunch of different sports. It is as strong of an Iowa State line as you will see. And there are a lot of people, and this isn't a shot, I understand, who are very comfortable having that as their handicap. That line doesn't make sense. Give me the Cyclones. I can't get there with stuff like that. The line has to be there for a reason. I think the line is there because of what Iowa State was supposed to be preseason. And I still think even this deep into a college football season, you see a lot of teams get their numbers booked on preseason prices. This reminds me so much, Donnie, of when you and I broke down Ohio State, Oregon. The Buckeyes were laying 2.5 touchdowns. I couldn't find a person that thought that line made sense on Ohio State. And they lost the game outright. And one more note here, Donnie, because people are saying Oklahoma State's fraudulent. They're not as good as people think. Boise State, they were 3.5-point dogs. Cover. Kansas State, 6-point favorites. They win by 11. Cover. Baylor, 3.5-point favorites. Win by 10. Cover. By the way, Baylor beat Iowa State. And then against Texas, 3-point dogs. They win by 8. Cover. Like, it's one thing to all see. Like Oregon doesn't cover. So we can talk about that. Oklahoma State's not only winning, they're covering. They're actually outperforming the pregame expectations.
No, you're right. And sometimes that's all you have to come down to. Like, you have to take those preconceived notions that you had at the beginning of the year. This team is going to be really good. So you just say, okay, they're eventually going to get it together because they're going to be really good. Mm-hmm. No, this is college. We didn't even know who's going to show up week to week at this time. You can only go on what you see here. And the one thing that I do know, Kevin, Oklahoma State is 6-0, which means they're winning every game they play, both home and away. And that means a lot.
Absolutely. Continuing to move, though, I mentioned just Oregon. Comparable spot here. Pretty really comparable, in fact. Unranked UCLA laying a number, but much smaller. 1.5 to top 10 Oregon. 5-2 against 5-1. UCLA a home favorite here, Donnie. Now, this you can maybe justify a little bit more with a 1-5 against the spread record for the Oregon Ducks.
Exactly. Loses a 3 straight also against the number versus Arizona, even though they picked up an easy win, 41-19, didn't cover that number. Lost in a shocking fashion to Stanford, 31-24, and then barely squeaked by a bad Cal team, 24-17. You're right. When we take a look at those two lines, because I'm glad we did these two games like side by side, because you're taking a look at two top 10 caliber teams playing unranked teams and going on the road. This one makes a little bit more sense because I think Chip Kelly has a little bit more of a pedigree where you don't have to win the game, Kevin, by double digits to get the cover, essentially. You just have to win the ball game outright. If you take a look at you know, UCLA on their season, you know, tough loss to Fresno State, lost to Arizona State, came back with a win against everybody, beats Arizona 34-16. You beat Washington on the road, which we thought Washington might be a player in the national championship picture to maybe make the playoffs and win the Pac-12. Not the case this year, but you still won on the road 24-17. If I'm looking at the two numbers between the first game we previewed with Oklahoma State and this game at UCLA, I am much more comfortable with UCLA pulling the upset at home over a top 10 team than I would be vice versa in covering those lines. I think UCLA, this points to them here.
It really does, right? The Chip Kelly Oregon angle makes a lot of sense. Also, the total is like 60.5. Oregon's been playing a lot of unders. Remove the Stony Brook game, 4-1 to the under, with their one over being an over of 59 in the Arizona game where there were 60 points put up on the board. They've been playing some lower scoring football, and UCLA has also played back-to-back under, so I'm not sure if this game gets explosive in maybe the way that total would suggest. Another interesting spot here involving a Pac-12 team that was supposed to be near the top of the conference, but they're actually just not that good. USC, they're playing number 13 Notre Dame here, Donnie. The Fighting Irish off of a bye, finally not having a rest disadvantage in a game, though USC is still off of a bye because every team Notre Dame plays is coming off of a bye. What do we think about Notre Dame and USC having a battle here this week in college football?
I mean, it used to be one of the great rivalries in football, right? But these are two teams that seem to be heading in different directions. You know, Notre Dame just trying to stay up top here at 5-1, maybe an outside chance to make the playoffs. And USC looks like week to week, Kevin, just trying to not embarrass themselves at this point and looking for a head coach to try to resurrect that program. There's only one way it can look. Maybe if USC was at home and, hey, we're going to get up for this game. We're playing Notre Dame in our own building. But the fact that they have to go on the road, and what is USC actually playing for at this time, being 3-3? Is USC just saying, hey, let's get to the, you know, some random blue bonnet bowl at the end and we're going to celebrate like that? Absolutely not. This is a lost season for USC, but not a lost season for Notre Dame. So for that simple fact here, if we can keep this under a touchdown, I think Notre Dame can get the job done. Because, again, it doesn't come down to, you know, whose talent is better. It's one team already thinking of playing out the string and the other team saying, hey, guys, we can salvage our season and maybe get back into the playoff here.
I think overall the over looks like a nice spot here. Both these teams have combined 8-4 towards the over, 3 straight for USC. But in terms of Notre Dame, like, and this is a funny thing, people are like, oh, Notre Dame's always overrespected. In what world? They have one loss. It's everybody's favorite team in the whole country, Cincinnati, that's number 2, and Notre Dame's back here at 13. Purdue, top 25, beat Iowa. Notre Dame beat that team by 14, and somehow Iowa in front of Notre Dame. Have a little credibility here, all right? I mean, we already saw Ben on this network have absolutely no integrity and put Iowa in front of him in his top 10. I mean, you'd think the pollsters would have a little bit of integrity here and respect the Fighting Irish for the good of the game, but it seemingly isn't the case here. Moving to the SEC, Donnie, Ole Miss, LSU. I have no idea how this LSU team is a real thing. Ed Ogeron, like, they're like, yeah, Ed O's going to be done at the end of the year. Like, he has, like, 8 games left. Like, it's so wild. They won last week as big home dogs against Florida. They're getting almost double digits here against Ole Miss, though the number's trickling down an 8.5. And a typical Ole Miss total, 76 and a hook. What do you make of this spot?
Yeah, we just talked about USC, right, playing out the string, trying to find a head coach. Well, at least they got rid of their head coach. Now you take a look at Coach O, who gets fired. I've never seen a more jovial press conference. Like, I love this place. You know, this is really good, and chicken on a stick is very good, and the gumbo, and I got $17 million coming to me. So when you take a look at Coach O, what's not to love about Coach O? He's always animated. But let's take a look at the X's and O's, which probably is going to get him fired here. That was an amazing win. And I think LSU probably had that, you know, sheet ready to be read after the game. Like, hey, after another tough loss to Florida in our own building, we had to make a change. Mm-hmm. Instead, had to put like a smiley face. I'm like, yeah, we already agreed to this midweek. It had no bearing on this game versus Florida. Great win, Coach O. Enjoy the rest of your parades for the rest of the season. And we'll wire you into your bank account over the next 15 years, millions and millions of dollars. But now you got to go on the road and play a good football team. The only question is, Kevin, how do you wrap your mind around this? Because LSU is always going to be talented. They're almost getting 10 points in this football game against Ole Miss. Should Ole Miss come out and whack this team? Yes. Ole Miss struggled a little bit and had a close game last week and a very, you know, interesting finish in their game versus Tennessee. But now you look at the total in this game. This is the SEC. The SEC is hanging another 76 on the board. Am I crazy to just say take the under? But then I look last week and I'm like, wait a second, LSU and Florida shot it out here. You know Ole Miss would be happy to engage in a shootout in this game. Just wild numbers in the SEC. I'm going to be go like if I look at this game, I would like to say LSU stays around a touchdown number, and that's the way I'll play this one out.
The back door should be open in a spot like this. I will say we've seen all of the Ole Miss home games get over the total. They kind of like to do the little flip-flop here. Ole Miss has actually provided some of the easiest unders of the season because they put their totals in the 80s at some times. You're like, well, hold on a minute now. And the Bama game and the Tennessee game both went under. And I got to say, like, not only is LSU doing some wild stuff here, but Lane Kiffin just with a big banner, like, hey, I don't know if Matt Corral's going to play. I'd have no, like, is he trying to, like, just trick Ed Ogeron into being underprepared for the game? Or is Matt Corral going to actually not play this game? Like Donnie, if Matt Corral doesn't play, certainly this dips to, like, a 3-point spread on Ole Miss. I mean, the guy's the co-favorite for the Heisman.
Yeah, first off, there's no injury reports in college football. So you could have a quarterback with his leg amputated on Monday, and the coach would be like, you know what, he's got a shot to make it Saturday. He's doing everything he can to get back in the lineup. So the fact that you have a Heisman candidate quarterback that they're trying to get into the playoffs and maybe win the SEC saying on Monday morning, yeah, this doesn't look good at all. You got to be kidding me, Lane. I'm not buying this.
It's very weird. I mean, it's also just the nature of being a dual-threat quarterback, which I don't know if a lot of people realized about him. 30 attempts for 195 wow. against Tennessee? What even is that? What in the Lamar Jackson? I mean, I guess. Good for you, pal. Getting
running
after good old Matt Corral.
Not happy about
that. Snoop Connor has something to say about the play call in here. He's trying to get Matt Corral benched for the week. Enough time to bring up one more game here, I think, Donnie. The Buckeyes in Indiana. Very, very funny that this was supposed to be the worry spot for Ohio State because it was a road Indiana. And they're 3-touchdown favorites. The Hoosiers are an absolute debacle. They're 2-4. Like, their under win total might have already cashed for people here. What do you make of the Buckeyes laying a gargantuan number?
Yeah, you're at night. You're at prime time. You want to try to get back in the playoffs. What better way to do it against at least a name team in Indiana at this point? I look at that total around that 60-point range, and I think we're going to get points, not because I think Indiana can go up and down the field. It's because I think Ohio State needs to, Kevin, go up and down the field. Forget about the 21.5, which means you might have to win this game by 4 touchdowns. Can they do it? Yes. But I'm looking for points in this game, particularly out of Ohio State, and maybe you get a running mate with Indiana. If Indiana can get into that 20s range, they should be able to knock down that 60, Kevin.
It's a shame that C.J. Stroud didn't get to, you know, had to miss a game here because he's now got 10 touchdowns, no picks in his last 2 weeks of action, over 700 yards passing. 7-1 to win the Heisman is absolutely going to enter the fray here if they go out and pour it on Indiana. Up next, it's what you've been waiting for here in hour number one, producers' plays. We'll close out the hour next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on the early line, it is time for producers' plays. And would you believe, Donnie, that we are light a couple of entries? Now, Fasano is one thing. Anytime Fasano hits a 1-2 week, he steps back, I'm not seeing the board very well, and takes a week off. Parlay Sam hits 2 in a row, which I guess I'm happy for him. I don't know if that's true. He just takes off. He's up like 10 units on the year. He's increasing bankrolls left and right. And he just bails, Donnie, after hitting 2 straight moneyline parlays?
Yeah, that's how the big boys do it, man. You hit, you get out, you take some time off, you let the market reassess, you say wait for the casinos to say, please come back, we need your money. That's a pro's move right there.
Man, I should be hosting the show, it starts to feel like, at some points here. Here's what we got for the people, though. We got a little 4-pack from Jack on the college football slate here. Laying the number with UCLA makes some sense. Laying the number with Bama. I think a lot of people are going to be betting Bama just throughout the rest of their season. OU laying 39.5 against Kansas. That's probably going to end up being an easy bet, to be honest with you. Kansas is that bad. I'm surprised it's not 50. Pitt laying 3.5, Donnie. Seeing the college board well there. Big Car Brian checks in with a lot of What do you think about Big Car Brian betting every Cincinnati spread here? I feel like it's a direct shot at me. I don't like it very much.
No, they're going to overtake Notre Dame. As long as they keep covering spreads, Notre Dame is going to be blocked out of the college football playoff.
Yeah, well, just wait. Navy's going to upset this team outright. I'm almost positive of it there. Slips in a Detroit over 50.5. Washington Green Bay over 48.5. The Ducks make the card. You love to see the Ducks make the card. Yeah, the USC thing, I mean, I'm absolutely ignoring that. I'm focused way more on the New Mexico State Hawaii total.
Since the USC parlay, get it done.
Damn. I got it. You think that Steve was watching Big Card Brian get love and said, I can't have any of this? I mean, he picked every single game against the number, Donnie.
Yeah.
I mean, he picked every game against the number. How do we feel?
Very easy to do in the NFL, but I do like the Cincy-USC parlay here that I think we're going to be able to make work under Brian's plays. That's a direct shot at one of the hosts here.
It's a dead loser, man. Hour number two is next. Ugh.